Let's go to Terry Savage, the syndicated financial columnist. It's Wednesday again. Hi, Terry.
Hello. What's going on?
Well, I'm actually getting text messages from people about rollover IRAs and what the Social Security bump might be next time.
Where do you want to start?
Do the second one first, if you don't mind.
Okay. So we don't know, but we know there's inflation. And this past year, we had the Social Security recipients had a 5.9% increase. And as I remember saying at the time, in fact, it was about a year ago when everybody starts predicting, I said it would be a significant increase, but don't spend it right away because other things like Medicare Part B premiums and supplement premiums and so forth would climb to eat away at that increase. Now, the chief actuary at Social Security said, I think it was yesterday, that so far it looks like the cost of living adjustment could get closer to 8% for next year. They won't know that until they see the inflation numbers. We'll get the most recent numbers. We're in June, so these will be for May. We'll be out on Friday, but not until the September numbers are figured will we be able to know for sure, which will be like in October.
Yeah.
But at that point, we'll see what the Fed's been able to do. But even if it is 8%, which would be great for Social Security recipients,
wow.
It doesn't mean that it's going to cover all your increases in, you know, prescription drugs and milk and eggs, in case anybody's been looking, not to mention gas for your car.
Eggs are really expensive now. Lise Glink yesterday on WGN said she'd heard rumblings of 8 or 9%. And we were wondering if you were hearing the same thing.
Well, the chief actuary at Social Security actually came out with a comment that the way it's going so far this year, it should be around 8%. I never heard anyone say 9%. You know, a lot depends on what the Fed does to get inflation under control.
So are people able to shop around some of the inflated prices of things like, okay, I won't eat eggs, or I won't, I'll drive less. I wonder if people can insulate
themselves. Sure, people are already driving less. I'm finding out that my car notices if I don't get the super gasoline, you know, the gold or silver, you know. I noticed it. And I said to myself, wait, is this going to make a big difference if it's $5 more a fill-up or whatever it is? You know, it's 40 cents a gallon times probably about 20 gallons. I never let it get down to zero, is $8. And I said to myself, for me, no, I'd rather have my car happy. But for plenty of people who are living on just Social Security benefits, a tank of gas, which is what, maybe about 300 miles, that's a big difference in how much they'll drive. And people have to drive. People have to drive to get to work. So sure, it's causing trade-offs. It's a very dangerous to generalize from what you and I might think as a marginal increase in cost to what happens. And I guess because I'm so plugged in, people post on my blog, and I just sort of feel like I have my finger, my heart on the pulse of people who have no way to increase their earnings at this stage of life except wait for Social Security to give them a bump.
Terry Savage, 312-981-7200. Before we go to calls, you wrote, in fact, about rollover IRAs, right?
Well, this is a big thing. You know, many people retire and leave their 401k behind at their employer. That's fine. But because people have been concerned lately about safety or being more conservative, I think that sometimes it's wise to do a direct rollover so you can get into an IRA at a place like Fidelity or Vanguard or T. Rowe Price, where you have a wider choice of more conservative funds. Now, people say, well, wait a minute, how do I do that? And there's an industry of financial, I'm going to call them salespeople or quote advisors or whatever they are, standing out there saying, oh, we're having a dinner tonight at the such and such place. Come and learn how to roll over your IRA. We'll do it for you. And they roll you over into high funds with high fees. They may have commissions involved. They have, quote, planning fees. And none of that is necessary. But as the boomers retire, there's an industry that's going to grab onto that money. They can't really touch it when it's in your 401k. The cost of your 401k is what your company put together, and most companies now know they go to these big providers and have low costs. So how do you roll it over? You never take the money. You do a direct rollover, and the instructions are all in this column at terrysavage.com. It ran in the Tribune over the weekend as well.
815 says, Terry said to roll over a portion of your IRA to a Roth. What taxes do I pay on that? Is that the amount on top of my income?
I pointed that when you do the rollover, first of all, you probably want to do a direct rollover to a rollover IRA. And then you have to wait a year, but then you can do a Roth conversion, or you can do it all at the same time. It's a little more complicated. When you convert to a Roth, you pay taxes on all of the gains in that account as ordinary income. So the whole thing that you take out and roll over is added to your ordinary income. Now watch out, because if you retire and that's a year you're going to be taking Medicare, that'll be added to your income. It could boost your Medicare monthly premium significantly.
Right.
So
right.
You want to get a little bit of financial advice before you do a conversion. And I will say that, of course, the best time to do a conversion is not when the market's at its peak, because then you're going to pay the most taxes. You know, your 401k was worth $112,000, now it's only worth $72,000. So the time to do the conversion is when the market is at its lows. And I don't know when the lows will be. I suspect this at Dow 33,000 is not the lows for this move. But so that's another thing about the timing of it. So it's not something you do casually. You need a good financial advisor. I always mention WealthRamp.com, WealthRamp.com. I get zero, nothing, nada out of this. But that's a site that will match you with fiduciary, fee-only advisors who will give you advice based on your best interests.
815 says, can I use any of the money from the rollover to pay the taxes?
Well, you can't use the money that you rolled over. You should have money outside of your retirement account to pay the taxes. Otherwise, that negates some of the rollover.
What about this? 630 says, is putting an IRA in a trust better than to a beneficiary, less inheritance tax?
You know, you typically do not want to have your revocable, it has nothing to do with inheritance tax. Unless you're going to leave $12 million in your total estate, don't even think about inheritance taxes. But typically you want to name a person or persons, your spouse, and then a secondary beneficiary, your two adult children perhaps, as beneficiaries of an IRA. The rules have changed for the requirements for those beneficiaries to withdraw the money. Most, except for your spouse, have to take it all out within 5 years. And the IRS is still clarifying those rules, actually. But typically, you don't want to leave your IRA to your revocable living trust, because then you'd have to immediately cash it in and pay taxes.
How about this? Robert's got a question for Terry Savage. You're on WGN. Robert, how can we help you?
Hey guys, how are you?
Very
quick question. Just sold my house, 58 years old, divorced, never invested a single penny in my entire life, and now I have $100,000 cash to do something with it. I am afraid of a market because I obviously wins, loss. So what should I do with this money? How do I invest it for my next 20 years?
Ooh, that's a really good question. And are you working now?
Yes, I am. Part-time, though.
Part-time. So you don't have any kind of a retirement plan?
Nope, this was it.
Okay. Well, you probably don't need the tax deduction because you're not going to be taxed on that gain. So maybe what you want to do is open a Roth IRA. And at your age, how old did you say you're?
58.
Yeah, 58. At your age, you're going to put $6,000 in the Roth IRA now. And you can, what I would do with this, I would make it very specific, although there's thousands of funds. I would go to T. Rowe Price Mutual Funds. I know that number by heart, 800-638-5660, primarily because I've invested in this particular fund. It was the first fund I ever bought 40 years ago or something. And it's called their Equity Income Fund. I would call and say, I want to open an IRA and put $6,000 in your equity income fund. It's kind of a conservative fund. I would leave the rest of the money in a money market account right now, and I would avoid getting married again.
Yes, that's my
other piece of advice.
Okay.
And then next year, you could put another $6,000 in the Roth IRA. And I can't give you specific advice about investing the rest of it right now, but I kind of agree with you that if you've got this found money, it's your security blanket, you could search online at bankrate.com for the highest yielding money markets and CDs. But see, rates are starting to rise. The 10-year Treasury's up now over 3%. So I think the Fed's going to keep acting. You can leave it in your money market account, the rest of it for the time being, and rates will rise. That's not a very personalized bit of advice. If you want to do some financial planning, why don't you check out WealthRamp.com and see if you can match up with a financial advisor who can give you more specific advice. But yeah, that's the first step.
That's pretty close. That's very helpful. Robert, I hope that helps, and I hope that helps other people too. Remember now, Terry's conversations with us are always podcast after the show. So if you want to say, well, wait, was the number? What was the thing? Who is the what? Just go to WGNradio.com and click on the podcast of the Wintrust Business Lunch for today, Wednesday. Terry, anything you want to say before we go back to your call?
I'm just watching the market now, off 327 on the Dow, which is about 1%, and ditto for the NASDAQ and a little bit more for the S&P. You know, I this is a gratuitous comment. In other words, why am I walking out on this plank? But I don't think we've seen the end of this, the worst of this bear market yet. It just strikes me that there are too many people. I mean, I think some of the traders that were, you know, in the tech stocks, they've gotten hurt. Some of those stocks are down 70, 80% even. The meme stocks. But I don't think that the hurt has been bad enough, frankly, for this to qualify as a bear market. And with my outlook for inflation being very tough to tame and the Fed increasing interest rates, I think there's kind of I can feel it on the street and in the market numbers that I would be very surprised to see a big breakout to the upside, but not terribly surprised to see this market either languish here or even go lower. Now, I know a lot of people, I have CNBC on a lot in the background, and every 2 minutes you get a debate. No, it's going higher. It's over. We're having a bounce. We're not. I just want to once again say, if you're uncomfortable with your exposure to the stock market, or as I've pointed out many times, to the bond market where prices fall when rates go up, if you're uncomfortable, do something on a quiet, nothing day like this, not when you come home and hear the headlines that it was down 2 or 3% in one day. And we might have some more of those headlines.
With that in mind, then let's take Kelly's call on line two.
Okay.
Hey, Kelly, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, Terry, I think you're amazing for women and just the knowledge you have. Oh, my God, I've been a fan of yours forever. And the fact that I'm actually speaking to you right now in this time, I'm just thrilled. And you're just
Thanks,
really special, seriously.
Thank you. You made my day. So what's the question?
Oh, but it's so true. And you really are amazing. I'm in a situation, I'm going to be 60 this summer. I'm a widow now for 4.5 years. And you just were speaking about my biggest fear right now. I was left, a really nice, income from that I have invested right now for my retirement, but I've seen it drop like $80,000 over the past 5 months and I'm panicking. So I did panic, and I have a very conservative portfolio, a good financial advisor, but I had to move it into a money market just for what you said, this bear market. When I saw just dropping, I not having my husband's income anymore, and that, you know, he had a really good income every year, I panicked. And how do I keep this move, you know, now that I'm hitting
60, wait, stop for a second.
Yeah, you know.
Do you have an advisor? Is it a broker who gets paid on commissions, or
it's an individual advisor, just his own business, and it's just a straight fee, a percent.
Okay. And when you called and said I'm panicked, did your advisor say, "Well, let's make you feel better. We'll sell half of it," or did you sell everything?
I did move it into a money market.
All of
everything.
He tried to advise me not to. You know, it's fluctuating, you know, write it out. I'm a panicky person. And I just, Okay.
Hold on. We're going to run out of time. So Kelly, let's try and help you.
Look, that was the whole point of what I said coming back. I just have these feelings. People are going to panic. I know that. I know that feeling myself. I've been around the markets for a long time. And the easiest way to quell panic, this won't apply to you, Kelly, because you've done this now, is that old statement. I know it's just an old bromide, but it's sell down to the sleeping point. If you had maybe 30% of that money or 40% in the bank, you wouldn't have been so panicked to sell it all. You might have sold another 10%. And that's what so anybody who hasn't panicked yet, I'm telling you there's a distinct possibility the market could move lower. Sell down to the sleeping point. Now you're all in cash. It's in a money market account. Number one, he shouldn't be charging you 1% anymore to manage your money because...
That's correct.
Okay, so because that would eat up all of the interest you're earning. And now I think interest rates will climb a little bit. So you're 60. You didn't want to lose any money. You say you still have an income that covers your expenses, right?
I do.
Okay, so leave it in the money market account in the bank. I promise you those interest rates will creep up over the next 3 or 4 months. Relax, sleep well, and call us back in 3 months.
At some point, she's going to start putting money back into the market.
Maybe. Let's just see what happens. Why don't you just post on my Ask Terry blog in 3 months and remind me that you're Kelly who panicked and sold. But I am not about to tell you to go get back in now. Definitely I'm not going to do that. Sleep well for the next 3 months. You're not going to lose any money except a little to inflation. And as I said, I think rates will start to rise now.
Good luck, Kelly. And do that or call us back in 3 months. Just put a little circle on your calendar. Call Kelly. Kelly, call John and Terry in 3 months. It's 12:44. Let's just do one fast phone call, and that's going to be Nancy. Nancy, we want to help you. Be quick, okay?
I sure will. My daughter just finished her first year of teaching, and she's still at home. She'd like to get an apartment. And honestly, we just don't know how much of her salary we should be or she should be spending on her housing.
Okay, number one, she has student loans?
None.
None. Oh, good for her. Okay. If you could stand it and she can stand it, she should stay there for another year. What you might do is charge her a little bit of rent. I know it doesn't make much as a teacher, but whether you charge her $500 or $600 a month for rent, put that in a separate account. Give it to her when she's ready to move out in a year. It's painful, I've always said, for the kids and for the parents, once they're adults and working to stay at home, but you're going to find out that she's going to pay, you know, $1,500, $2,000, maybe even for a studio in a safe place. And think of all that money she could be saving for her future.
Is there a formula that says so much should
go
to you?
Yeah, it used to be 30%. Then it got up to be 40%. But if you have that soft landing cushion, make her feel more responsible. Say, look, we'll charge you rent. And so you'll see what it's like to have to make a monthly payment. And then, of course, at the end, you can just hand it to her and say, now, go buy furniture for your new apartment.
Okay.
Okay, that's the discipline. That is the kind of discipline for a young person to suffer at home with your parents wondering, knowing what time you got in, even though you're a working teacher and you're on your own. That's the discipline that will get her off to a good start. Whereas I want it, I see it, I make it, I work hard for it, I spend it. At the end of the month, I have $26 left. That's not a good way to start.
Earlier this week, Elise Link had what the median rent is in Chicago. And Pete, I'm looking at you. I think for a one-bedroom, it was $1,200. And for a two-bedroom, it was closer to $2,000. I'm going to double-check that, but maybe that number helps too.
Yeah, and you also have to think where you want to be living alone or with a roommate as a young single gal. It's going to be more than that, I promise you. That may be the median, but just think about the median, including an awful lot of rent-subsidized and rent-controlled apartments.
It's 12:45. TerrySavage.com is where you find her, as well as here on Wednesdays. We'll visit next week, Terry.
Absolutely. Thanks.
312-981-7200 is the number you call and text for Terry, or go to TerrySavage.com any day of the week. It's 12:46. The Business Lunch continues with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. State Street is losing another store. Shoe retailer DSW is closing its location at 35 South State later this month, according to Cranes. DSW has been at the location since 2012 and occupies 26,000 square feet in the Sullivan Center. The company is one of several tenants leaving the Loop, where the retail vacancy rate is at a record high, 27.4%. Disney, New York & Company, and Urban Outfitters are among the other high-profile closures. There are signs of some recovery, though. JD Sports, which owns the Finish Line chain, is opening a store at 10 South State, and Five Below is taking over a store at 36 South State. Home Products International of North America is going out of business. The Chicago-based molder of housewares products is blaming the rising price of resin and steel and unsuccessful attempts to sell the company. It filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection earlier this week. Home Products International uses resin to produce plastic storage products and steel to produce ironing boards. A filing says resin prices have doubled and steel prices have tripled. The company's products for storage, home organization, and laundry care are sold at Walmart, Target, and Amazon. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
To the caller a moment ago who was wondering how much her daughter should spend now that she's going to pay her own rent, Pete double-checked it. The median, as many above or as below this number, the median rent in Chicago for a one-bedroom is $1,287. So we were about right on recollecting that. But for the two-bedroom, it's $1,400. Two-bedroom is the median price for a two-bedroom apartment in Chicago. Business of Food Time, here's Steve Alexander.
And we are happy as clams to be sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Oh, the clam thing. Happy World Oceans Day to you.
Oh, great. Thank you. Happy World Oceans Day.
Teresa Ish works with the Walton Family Foundation's Ocean Initiative, making sure the seafood you buy is legally caught.
The Oceans Initiative is part of our environment program. We focus on building the sustainability of fisheries. We know that when you take care of the fish, you're also taking care of everything else in the ocean. And that means being smart about how much we fish, where we fish, what we fish, how much we fish.
And there's a chance the fish we're putting on our grill is illegal?
Definitely. There is a possibility that the fish are not legally caught. We've seen estimates ranging from 15 to 30% of the seafood sold in the United States is illegal.
And illegal means, among other things, that fish are caught where there should not be fishing.
The good thing is the majority of U.S. retailers have commitments to sell sustainable seafood, but we need them to go further and to actually ensure that those products are traceable to the source, really making sure that we're tracking where the product comes from, making sure that the people who catch it have a right to fish there, and making sure they're fishing in the right spot is all the types of information that we need.
Many retailers make it easier using a blue label featuring a fish to show it's sustainably and legally caught. And getting legal seafood should not be a problem.
It doesn't matter if you live on the coast or 1,000 miles inland. When you walk into your favorite grocery store or your favorite restaurant, you should ask, is this product sustainable? Where did it come from? Do you know how it was caught?
And how about this? She says there are eel smuggling rings
that will catch endangered eel and trade them across borders because it is worth so much money.
Want to learn more about legal, sustainable seafood?
We have more information on our website about why eating sustainable seafood is good for the ocean. And that website is waltonfamilyfoundation.org/seafood.
From the farm to your belly, today is National Jelly-Filled Donut Day. That's the business of food and fish on 720 WGN.
All right, we got just a couple of minutes here. Dale, we need more time to talk, but let's at least get started. Dale Buss joins us from the Flyover Coalition. I'm very interested in the interview you had with the CEO of Milwaukee Tool, right?
Yeah, for the Flyover Coalition and for Chief Executive, I write a lot about manufacturing, and I'm always interested in talking to heads of legacy companies like Milwaukee Tool, which has been around for almost a century. They make those power tools that skilled tradespeople have used for a long time. They came up with Sawzall, which is like, you know, part of the essential tool belt of a lot of tradespeople. But the company is reinventing itself into a solutions company. And they've got fantastic lithium-ion battery technology, which has allowed them to develop cordless tools that have the power and punch of corded and gas-powered varieties. So a really interesting story in terms of reinventing itself with electrification and also with digitization. And what's interesting for Chicago is that the Milwaukee Tool is in the process of opening and filling a space in the old downtown post office. You know, there are other tenants there, of course, like Walgreens, I think, and Uber. But Steve Richmond, the CEO, told me he thinks it's essential for them to get the kind of electrical engineers, firmware developers, software developers, the kind of people that they need to sort of continue this success story of being a legacy manufacturer adapting to and succeeding in the digital era. And they're growing at 20% a year, so they're doing really well. And I just think it's worth highlighting a company like that.
Yeah, you just answered my question. How are they doing, and was the pandemic good for them? Sounds like yes, huh?
Well, right. With the boom in housing construction, obviously, and renovations of houses and all that kind of stuff, I mean, that construction is right down their alley. But they're taking market share from bigger companies like 3M and Hilti. And it is this battery technology that they developed about 15 years ago, which really allowed them to leap out ahead. Plus, they take a lot of pride in, you know, figuring out what do tradespeople need? What do plumbers need? What do electricians need? People working in factories. And they're pivoting to this Chicago office because they think they can find the people that they want to continue to staff their growth in Chicago. They've got a new headquarters in Milwaukee. A lot of their operations are in Wisconsin, but this is like a crucial gambit for Steve Richman to say, hey, we're here in Chicago. We may have a name you don't like, Milwaukee Tool, but you know, we need people here who've got this kind of experience, and we know there are a lot in Chicago and also being fed by all the universities in the upper Midwest.
Yeah. Well, the name isn't the Milwaukee Brewers Tool Company. It's,
yeah, that would be
that'd be a completely different conversation. It's a really interesting story, particularly since you write about some of the things they are doing, which I think are transferable to other businesses. And you can read that in Chief Executive. You can also check out flyovercoalition.org. We'll talk another day, Dale. Thanks for your time today.
All right. Thanks, John.
That's our friend Dale Buss.